Welcome to the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb, leading the business conversation right here on SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. Today's number is 1,365. That number has significance because that is the number of male members on the New York Stock Exchange at the time when a lady by the name of Muriel Siebert became the first woman to own a seat on the New York Stock Exchange way back in 1967. History certainly does have a way of remembering things. I'm Jimmy Moyaha. This is the SAFM Market Update. Let's get you up to date. Coming up on the show today, we take a look at the latest results out of DRD Gold. We speak to the company's chief executive, Neil Pretorius, and get a sense of the performance of that business. Then we have a conversation taking a look at the extension of the AGOA agreement by the United States to 2028. We take a look at the potential implications of that on South Africa and our exporters towards the US and whether or not there is life beyond that extension. Then we have a conversation around the SADC summit that took place earlier this week. We reflect on that summit. We weren't able to reflect on it yesterday, but we will certainly reflect on it today. And keeping with that as well, we will be taking a look at the Baldwin Public Investment Corporation conversation that we weren't able to have yesterday. We have John Lewis confirmed for our conversation for today, and we're going to get a sense of whether or not that latest transaction makes sense for the Public Investment Corporation, makes sense for Baldwin shareholders. They have approved for the deal to go ahead, and we're going to reflect on what that deal looks like today. And because it's Wednesday, we've got an executive lounge conversation. We have in studio the Chief Executive for Personal Banking at African Bank, Happy Ralenala, joining me to get a sense of how it is that she got to where she is today.
The day's markets, clear insights on today's winners, losers, and what to do next.
As always, that's where we kick off the show with market movements that have been affecting local and international markets throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by Otto1890's David Shapiro to take a look at markets and see if we can make sense of them. Uncle David, lovely having you on the show as always. Thanks for the time. CPI data coming out of South Africa, coming out of the Eurozone. South African CPI data cooling ever so slightly. But I suppose the main underlying message with that was that we are not expecting the situation to get significantly worse than what it is at the moment.
No, I think, from a market point of view today, I think it was just brushed aside. And I don't think we're going to get any impact there. But Jimmy, the big news, and I don't know if you've been watching the market today, came from the Secretary of the Treasury in the US, Scott Bessent. And just to explain to listeners what happens, you know, as we're talking now, you asked me about the CPI and you asked me about interest rates. That's the short end of the market. By short end, it means like the overdraft rate, you know, the interest rate you're going to pay on your credit card. And that's set by the Federal Reserve, or that's set by the, in our case, you know, the Reserve Bank. But business and mortgages, you know, in other words, when you buy a house, those rates are at the top end of the market, long dated, and that's set by the market, not by the monetary authorities. And what's been happening in the US, rates have been creeping up to levels that we haven't seen in almost 20 years, since 2007, and that caused a lot of concerns in the market. In the US, I'm talking about the 30-year rate, on which decides where mortgages are, and also the 10-year rate as well. Those were creeping up and causing a lot of anxiety. And that's because of the Iranian war, the impact that high oil prices are going to have on the economy, and so on. But what happened today, Jimmy, is that Scott Bessent, the Secretary of Treasury, announced that they will be buying back bonds, in other words, off the market. This is something they did during COVID. And what that does is it puts liquidity in the market. In other words, you're buying stuff off the market. Not only are you putting money in the market, but you're pushing rates down. I don't want to explain it saying, well, you know, you push the bonds prices up, which means rates go down. But generally, what it means is rates are going down. So that caught the market by surprise. And rates in the US, long rates in the US, started to come down. With that, the dollar came under pressure. And with that, gold, platinum, all of those metals, you know, just soared. Gold up 3.5%, silver up 3.5%, platinum up, 3.5%, and so on. So we had a mammoth day. And I want to point out something else as well. It would have been bigger, but a lot of shares like Anglo's, Kumba, Anglo Gold, Valterra all went ex-dividend, and they paid big dividends. And if we add back the dividends that they paid today, what we call the shares went ex-dividend, in fact, the share price gains would have been a lot higher. So it was a huge, huge day on the market for, on the local market with the JSE up almost, 2.5%. So big day.
Uncle David, the day isn't over because we still have an FOMC meeting out of the US. We still have President Trump set to speak later on. We know that both of those events individually have the power to move markets into the evening session and into tomorrow's Asian session. I want to get your thoughts around whether or not the FOMC conversation starts to look different, because Kevin Warsh and his team now have to respond to what Treasury has announced from that perspective. And they have their own mandate that they need to adhere to.
Their mandate is on the short side. That's what I'd say. So it's, I think they were also concerned about the long end. It does impact them. Jimmy, Home Depot's numbers came out. It's an iconic business in the United States, do it yourself, for builders and so on. And it's a very worrying area. And I think this has taken a lot of pressure off Warsh, because he wants to keep the short end. He wants to keep rates at these kind of levels. He doesn't want to reduce rates. He wants to get on top of inflation. But on the other hand, you've got this deep worry about the affordable economy, by, say, affordability in the economy. And it's a big issue that Trump has to fight. This is going to be the fight in the midterm elections about affordability. People complaining about the price of petrol, complaining about the costs going up, complaining about high interest rates. So I think Bessent's, as you say, I think Bessent's move today was designed to alleviate a lot of pressure on President Trump. And it's also will, in a way, give Kevin Warsh a little bit of breathing space on the worrying about the housing market. But markets, so even in the US, markets have gone up very, very strongly, coming out of the semiconductors, which have had a good run, and going into the other economy, those shares that have been ignored. But we're not matching what happened on the JSE today.
Uncle David, let's take a look at the Rand and wrap up the conversation around that. That absolutely loving the dollar weakness, coming in sub 16.10. I dare to say it, at some point, the 16 Rand per US dollar level looks very attractive, and we're dangerously close to that level.
Exactly. It's listen, we can break through it now if this continues. I think what Bessent has done is he sent a message to all those bond vigilantes, who are putting pressure on the rates and playing the market. They scuttled in today and covered their positions. Now, whether he goes through with it and how far he does it, is going to be the next move. But you don't want to go short this market. You don't want to go short of bonds. You don't want to go long the dollar. So I think the Rand can continue to improve against this, as long as this continues. And we will see our miners, are moving in the same direction. Big moves, will happen as rates go down, as it becomes cheaper to hold gold, and also the dollar comes under pressure. That's what we see, gold shares going up, platinum shares going up, and so on.
A great day on the JSE, and potentially more to come if markets continue to digest this latest intervention by the Treasury in the United States as a positive sign or as a positive stimulant towards that market. We'll see how markets shape up going into the rest of the evening. As we said, there's a lot of announcements still coming. And if this does continue, tomorrow could be an even livelier day than today. For now, Otto 1890's David Shapiro joining us to reflect on the day's market movements, some significant adjustments happening, and how they've been impacting the world of trade.
We're not just interested in banking businesses. We're interested in building better ones. Because the true value of a bank isn't what it provides. It's what it makes possible. Simpler operations, greater adaptability, long-term resilience. Think bigger. Think NetBank Commercial Banking. See money differently. Nedbank. We're licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
Every day, something shifts. A rate decision. A currency move. A headline that changes everything. Until tomorrow's does. Change is constant. And for us, that's not a problem to manage. It's where opportunity lives. For 35 years, we've navigated it to seek out the best opportunities for you, wherever they may be. Change is opportunity. We're always ready to invest in it. 91, investing for a world of change. 91 is an authorized FSP.
Sure, it's great knowing my net worth's denominated in dollars, euros, pounds, and rands. But that's not why I'm a client of Standard Bank Private. This is surprising my bro in the States on his birthday.
Surprise! It's not what you do that matters, but who you do it for. Get an offshore account with 4 currency options and pay no monthly maintenance fees. Search Standard Bank Private for more. Standard Bank, it can be. Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
SFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha.
DRD Gold, the mining company that has been in existence for a little over 130 years, currently listed on both the Johannesburg Stock Exchange as well as the New York Stock Exchange, released their results for their full year. The full year ended 30 June 2026. We're going to be taking a look at these numbers and reflecting on their performance in a bit more detail with the company's Group Chief Executive Officer, Neil Pretorius. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of that performance. Neil, lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Almost doubling operating profits, revenues almost 50% up, final dividends rewarding shareholders quite handsomely. I suppose this is the one financial year end that we get to report with very little to complain about. How did you make sense of the year?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And look, one must admit that the main actor in these numbers this year was the gold price. But it was nice to have the production numbers to take advantage of that gold price. And it was also encouraging to see how the team continued to manage their costs. And this was a year where there were a lot of moving parts, as will be next year, because we're in the middle of a very significant capital reinvestment program. So it was nice to see how the team kept it all together and delivered on the goods. We beat guidance by about 5,000 ounces, and that went straight to the bottom line. So it was it's a very satisfying year.
Neil, can we take a look at the operating aspects of the business? You touched on the fact that the team was able to contain costs, and I want to get a sense of how important that becomes at a time where, yes, the gold price is yielding significantly more than what it was last year, so very little needs to be done to achieve or to increase profitability and margins. How important is it at a time like that to not let costs run away? Because the business has been able to maintain costs very, very well, keeping all-in sustained costs sub $1,800 from an operating cost perspective. How important is it when times are good to still remember the fundamentals within the business?
It's absolutely essential. I mean, what I've seen in the, you know, the years that I've been involved in this business is I don't recall a single year where costs have actually come down, not once. So once costs go up, that's the new threshold, that's the new base. And next year it goes up some more, and the year after that it goes up some more. The gold price, on the other hand, that's all over the place. That moves up and that comes down, and it's, you know, driven by all sorts of different dynamics. So if you don't manage your costs very, very carefully, then these margins get eroded very quickly by an increase in cost. So it's the most important part, other than health and safety. Costs and cost discipline is definitely the most important part of a business like this, where you take full exposure to the price of your product.
Neil, can we take a look at that capital reinvestment program that you touched on? I want to get your thoughts around how that program looks different now going into the new financial year compared to previous years. I mean, you've been at the helm of this particular business since the 2008 financial crisis, and so you've seen many different cycles from a gold market perspective. How does the current market cycle influence things like that capital reinvestment program and the thinking from a management team perspective?
It's definitely enabling it, because when we did these, when we ran these numbers, and we sort of halfway through the program now, we started in 2024 planning, and execution 2025. At the time, we were already building a solar farm, but that was a catalyst. That wasn't part of the, let's call it the five enablers or the five key projects that form part of Vision 2028. So at the time when we ran these numbers, we were running them at a very significantly lower gold price. And we had put a financial loan, a facility in place, a 1.5 billion rand facility. We put that in place, and we were estimating that by the end of the previous financial year, we would be in debt to the tune of a billion rand if everything that we had planned happened exactly the way that we had planned. And that's because of where the gold price was when we did the planning. The reality of the matter was we were on the opposite side of a billion rand last year, at the end of the financial year, at just over a billion rand in free cash. And this year, after 3.5 billion rand reinvestment into the business, we ended the year with 2.7 billion rand in cash. So the gold price has been a huge enabler for us to reinvest all of this money. And the fact is that, you know, this is not money that we're investing because we simply just want to increase margin or anything like that. Obviously, it will have that, it will potentially have that effect, but it's to extend life of mine. It's infrastructure that is essential in order for us to take full advantage of our resource. But for the fact that we're investing this money, we would have been busy closing Ergo now, and the operations in the Far West, recovery's operations, they would have been going into a closure phase as well. So it's essential investment to, well, organically grow the business, but also to extend the life of our operations. And if it works out the way that we had planned, that by 2029, when the last of these are hopefully in place, there's a little bit of a lag in one of the projects that has 150,000 ton a month impact. Once that's in place, we would have organically increased our throughput rate by 40%, and that with cash flows that were being generated by the business itself and not having to take any debt exposure. So it's a good time to be doing something like this. Couldn't have come at a better time, this gold price.
Neil, a final word to investors before I let you go around that cash dividend. Obviously, with the stronger gold price, the ability to increase the final dividend so much more than the previous financial year, it's nice to be able to say to shareholders, thank you for sticking it out with us, but also for shareholders to be able to enjoy the upside to the gold price as the business has been able to do so. Your thoughts around how it is that you manage that, the rewarding of shareholders, but also the ongoing operations and the continuing operations of the business?
Dividend's been fundamental to our value proposition. This is the 19th consecutive year that the company has paid a dividend. And obviously this final dividend, which is just over a billion rand, I think it matches what the market cap was when we paid our first dividend, or at least there or thereabouts. So the approach that we've always taken is that free cash is distributed, and free cash is calculated, obviously, with reference to the amount of cash, net cash that the business generated, but then keeping a bit of a buffer for operating costs and then also retaining a portion towards near-term capital expenditure. And we ran the numbers, and it is a large dividend. It's 65% of free cash that's distributed this year, but we didn't do anything different in terms of our calculation compared to what we did in the past. So in proportion to the cash flow that was generated and in proportion to what we want to retain as a buffer for costs and in proportion to what we need to hold back towards reinvestment, the formula is pretty much consistent. So it's not a windfall dividend. It's one that's justified applying the same methodology that we have now for the last 19 odd years.
Maintaining consistency and ensuring that when market conditions are favorable to the business, that the business is able to make the very most of that for its own growth and for rewarding shareholders. We'll leave the conversation on that note. All the best to you and the team, Neil, in the new financial year. May the gold price continue to give you these sorts of returns. Neil Pretorius, Chief Executive Officer at DRD Gold, joining us to reflect on the year that was.
We're not just interested in banking businesses. We're interested in building better ones, because the true value of a bank isn't what it provides. It's what it makes possible. Simpler operations, greater adaptability, long-term resilience. Think bigger. Think Nedbank Commercial Banking. See money differently. Nedbank. We're licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
Did you know Recent rain does not always mean your soil is at field water capacity. Omnia can help determine plant available water, giving producers a view of their planting risk profile. It's one more way Soil Insight helps reduce production risk. Omnia Nutriology. Better farming starts with understanding your soil.
SFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha.
The 46th edition of the SADC Summit has recently concluded in Durban in KZN. We're going to be reflecting on this particular summit and getting a sense of some of the key outcomes of the summit. I'm joined on the line by board member at Business Unity South Africa, Dr. Stavros Nicolaou, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Stavros, lovely having you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. Certainly an important time to be having conversations around expanding regional cooperation and improving regional relationships. What was in focus at this year's summit?
Jimmy, firstly, good afternoon to you and also to all the listeners. And it's a great pleasure to be back on your show. It's always appreciated. The main theme that I picked up, and the summit was a 24-hour summit, literally, because it only ended at close to midnight last night. The main takeout for me as a business person or someone from the South African business community was twofold. Number one is most, if not all, countries around the world and all regions are looking to diversify their economic partnerships and their trade. And charity very often starts at home. SADC, which consists of 16 countries, not the wealthiest countries, not by any stretch, but they certainly represent a sizable market if you get integration, if you get internal collaboration and intra-country trade and investment, then it's sizable. It's not massive, but it's sizable. But it's also the region that we belong to, and it is a very much a proximity discussion as well for us. So leveraging volumes, getting economies of scale in the region is not insignificant in the broader Africa continental free trade area discussion, which you cited very early on in this interview. The second and probably the most important thing I took out, and this was reinforced by President Ramaphosa in his new capacity as SADC chairperson for the next 12 months. Of course, we assumed the chair from Zimbabwe. And the president was very clear and very strong on the need to industrialize the region. He spoke very much about beneficiation. Many, if not all of the 16 SADC countries are highly seized with primary commodities, minerals, primary commodities, which inevitably get exported as raw materials and get re-imported as manufactured goods into our region. And the president was very strong on the need for us to double down our efforts to collaborate on industrialization. So that was the key takeout. It's his apex priority, if I'm to look at it. And that is the agenda that he will most pursue, I believe, in the next 12 months. Now, that's easier said than done, because a lot of this depends on the policies of each of these individual countries, the procurement and the purchasing policies. But one thing is for certain, I think at very least, if during our presidency of the SADC, if we can achieve a level of coordination around pooled procurement or consolidating volumes, then that in itself will give leverage and will give momentum to both localization and also industrialization in the region.
Stavros, when we look at the gathering that took place, the Southern African Development Community is but one aspect of the continental trade conversations. We know, of course, the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement that is in place aims to strengthen our relationships on the continent more broadly. I want to get your thoughts around how we then leverage SADC, we leverage the Continental Free Trade Area and reposition Africa as a continent in global trade, because regional cooperation is but the first step. I suppose the broader conversation here eventually then becomes, how do we leverage that regional cooperation into global cooperation?
I think most people on listening in will recognize the challenges of giving practical expression or implementing the free trade agreement. You have 54 countries, different procurement rules, different procurement policies. I think we all know that Africa is not one single homogenous continent. So it is challenging. And the best way to achieve this, I believe, and so do many others, that if you start achieving this at a regional level, so you look at getting this right in East Africa, in SADC, West Africa, then your chances of integrating down the line are significantly improved. And that is why I said at the beginning of this interview, no, charity starts at home. I think if we want to increase intra-trade, by intra I mean countries within the continent trading with each other, if we want to attract intra-country investment, then we have to look at doing this at a regional level first, so that you can leverage enhanced volumes. You know, one country dealing on its own, or two or three countries, is not going to give you the size and the scope of what you need. But if you eventually get to, you know, 300-400 million population size regions, and those stack up over time, you can eventually get to the full 1.4 billion people on the continent. But our continent desperately needs investment. It needs to industrialize to create jobs, but more importantly, to grow domestic and regional economies, we need to be industrializing. And I'm enormously pleased that South Africa is focusing its presidency for the next 12 months on driving industrialization in the region.
A deeper focus on industrialization in the SADC region, but also broadly on the African continent. This is how we start to strengthen regional partnerships and ensure that those partnerships benefit our own economy, but also those of our neighboring countries. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Board member at Business Unity South Africa, Dr. Stavros Nicolaou, joining us to take a look at the outcomes of the latest SADC summit and where it is that we go to from here.
With a complete view of your finances, Nedbank Private brings every aspect of your financial life together to create solutions tailored to your evolving needs. From private banking and lending to long-term financial planning and wealth management, Nedbank Private supports you at every stage of your financial journey. While others see only part of you, we see all of you. See money differently. Nedbank Private. We're a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
SFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha.
The United States has officially extended the African Growth and Opportunities Act agreement for another 2 years, extending it to 2028. We're going to be reflecting on that in greater detail with the senior researcher for the South African Chair on African Diplomacy and Foreign Policy at the University of Johannesburg, Dr. Mikatekiso Kubai. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of this. Dr. Kubai, lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. The extension, I suppose, is good news, but it comes at a time where countries like South Africa are still on the receiving end of some very strict U.S. tariffs. What do we make of these latest developments?
Yeah, good evening, my brother. Thank you for inviting me. Good evening to your listeners as well. Well, for one, that's all it is, you know, an extension of AGOA, right? There's absolutely nothing that changes in the AGOA setup as it is. It's merely an extension by 2 years. That's the only change, you know, in the AGOA Act that Senate has passed. And it must still, by the way, get to the House, you know, to be ratified before it's sent to President Donald Trump for his signature and so on. But it bodes well, I think, you know, for relations between South Africa and the United States. It's a good, you know, positive. It's something to build on, you know. I mean, it's something that certainly, you know, by a lot of attention would have been on given, you know, by the recent, you know, frosty, you know, back and forth between South Africa and the US. But this is a positive. It's something that we can build on.
Dr. Kubai, this would extend it to the majority of the second term of the United States, or rather of the Trump administration. And I want to take a look at that in the context of the other efforts of the Trump administration to take a look at things like forced labor policies and impose tariffs around that. Those conversations almost having a dampener on the fact that the Growth and Opportunities Act, the AGOA agreement in and of itself, was to make global markets more easily accessible, or rather to make the US markets more easily accessible to African countries. The other policies that are currently in place seem to contradict this one.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, they do have, you know, an impact, you know, on the overall experience of AGOA. There's no doubt about that, AGOA and others. But remember, the relationship between the United States and South Africa stretches beyond, you know, AGOA. So symbolically, you know, not excluding South Africa from AGOA and just, you know, extending it as is a positive sign. You know, it's not a perfect, you know, but, you know, turnaround, you know, in position, you know, or but it's a positive sign, you know, something that, you know, we can build on. So in other words, it's not getting worse. Right, you know, and so on. So, you know, it's something that, you know, we can certainly build on. Remember that the U.S., you know, well, the Trump administration currently has, you know, all manner of, you know, tariffs, you know, against, you know, targeting just about everybody, including Europe, you know, one of its, you know, closest allies. In fact, its closest ally. And so on. It's got, you know, but, you know, tension, you know, its relations with Canada right next door, its relations with Mexico right next door as well, characterized by tension, you know, right now, and so on. So it's a positive, you know, my brother, irrespective of, you know, all the other elements, you know, that you know, come into the relationship.
I suppose a small win, however small it might be, is something to look forward to. Dr. Kubai, before I let you go, where do we go to from a South African perspective with that U.S. relationship? That relationship we know has been volatile since the reintroduction of President Trump into the White House. And we know that it's volatile not just in one particular sector, as you rightly mentioned. It's not just the AGOA agreement that we're dealing with here when it comes to that relationship. How do we continue to repair that relationship if there's anything South Africa can do for its part?
Well, for starters, you know, we selected an ambassador, and we now have an ambassador in the US, you know, that is, you know, working quite hard, you know, to help fix, you know, relations between South Africa and the US. I know, you know, but we're all, it's on record, you know, that our trade representatives are working very hard, you know, regularly engaging, you know, their US counterparts, and so on. There are, you know, regular conversations, you know, with the US ambassador here as well, and so on. And, you know, it's quite clear that, you know, South Africa is still, you know, very much, you know, open and willing, as it has always been, you know, to engage and so on. I think we have to keep at that. You know, we have to keep, you know, by nudging, we have to keep, you know, by cajoling, if you like. You know, we have to keep, you know, by being there, being present, you know, for that conversation, you know, about improving relations. Relations don't mean we have to agree on everything. You know, for instance, I mean, there are still some thorny issues. You've seen recently, for instance, the U.S. Department of State has placed sanctions on members of the ICC, for instance. And South Africa has taken, still has that case, you know, with the ICJ and so on. And that's a major bone of contention, you know, for the U.S. And so on. But be that as it may, South Africa does not have any acrimony or any animosity towards the U.S. You know, it has taken principled decisions, and you know, there's you know, a potential possibility, you know, for a good cordial relationship. We don't have to be the best of buddies, you know, but we can, you know, be fairly cordial and respectful of each other's sovereignty.
We can get along if we truly want to, and every step in that direction is a positive step. We'll have to leave the conversation on that note. Dr. Mikatekiso Kubai of the University of Johannesburg joining us to take a look at the extension of AGOA and what it means for South Africa.
Hi, I need irrigation funding for my farm.
Something that tracks moisture across the farm and rotates your crops?
Well,
A plus sensors that read your soil, reduce waste, and send water exactly where it's needed.
I was thinking basic irrigation, but financing
for a smart farming system
is actually what I need.
At Nedbank, we see more. From regenerative agriculture to smart farming solutions, we help agribusinesses think bigger. Think Nedbank Commercial Banking. See money differently. Nedbank. We're a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
SFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha.
So yesterday we were supposed to have a conversation with independent economist John Lewis around the Public Investment Corporation's decision to buy out Borwin Properties and the subsequent vote that took place by Borwin shareholders approving that transaction by 98% of votes that were in attendance. We do have that conversation. Of course, we did promise you that we're going to come back to that conversation. We do have John on the line now to see if we can make sense of that particular transaction and how it is it could affect the property portfolio of the Public Investment Corporation. John, lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. 2.2 odd billion rand transaction, a 41% premium has been offered on those shares. The PIC not going to become the majority shareholder just yet, but a very clear conversation that this transaction will result in the delisting of Borwin Properties as we know it today. What do you make of the transaction and of the vote giving it the go-ahead?
Well, interesting one. Yeah, if you look at Borwin's share, 245 odd when I last looked, it's improved significantly from about 180 in 2023 when interest rates were on the rise at that stage of the cycle. But still pretty poor from, if one looks back to 2015, which was nearest to 10 rand a share. So, and it generally, I think the price and the trend sort of reflects the mediocrity of the residential development market. I think it's been a struggle since COVID. The residential development market's never recovered to pre-COVID levels. So, and this is the problem, Jimmy, with residential developments is it's not a reliable annuity income. It's a very chunky income, it's lumpy, it's erratic is probably the word. There's these long pipelines, long from planning to development. You sit on a lot of land. It's a risky business. So one gets the impression the institutional investors in this stage of the market cycle where development is weak, probably not too unhappy to move out. And the PIC, which takes a longer-term development focus as well, a socioeconomic development focus on top of, you know, looking at financial returns, possibly the one to more that type of investor to take a bigger stake in Borwin, because I think for the good of the country, I mean, residential development is very important, but it is one has to be in it for the long haul, very cyclical in the short term, very erratic, but you know, in the longer term, it's a much needed investment.
John, it sounds like all parties are winning here. The PIC gets to achieve its mandate. Investors that have been involved in Borwin that might wish for the days of 10 rand a share that you alluded to might not be able to get there, but they're offered an opportunity to exit at this point and recover some of their initial investment, especially those that might have gotten in sub the 4.35 offer that is on the table. By all accounts, it does look as though this could be a win-win for everybody involved, I guess.
Well, yeah, I think for the investors exiting, yeah, it seems like a good deal given where the market currently is, I guess. But, you know, much whether it's a good valuation or not, it depends very much on how you see the longer run outlook, I would say. It's got a lot to do with the economic and property market outlook. Now, I think that the economic super cycle is probably turning. I think the policy thinking is improving in the country. There's a long way to go till we get out of our stagnant hole. It is a long-term investment. But I do see a few years from now, we could be heading back to north of 3% economic growth, and with it significantly better employment growth And with that, obviously, significantly better residential development growth. If you take a more optimistic view on the longer term growth of the country, then I don't know. But you know, obviously, the future is always a hazardous. It's not without its hazards when you're forecasting the future. So not everyone would take my more optimistic, longer run view on the long term economic recovery of South Africa. In which case, you might want to, you know, it might seem a good value at which to exit.
Speaking of that exit, John, I want to take a look at just Bowen's history on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Obviously, that 10 Rand a share price you alluded to was the IPO price way back in October of 2015, the first trading day, if I remember correctly. Back then, we traded around 11 Rand a share. So 10 years on, almost, if not a little over 10 years on, to be able to sit back as the management team, as investors, everybody looking at all of the cyclical movements you've been touching on, how do we reflect on Baldwin's tenure on the JSE?
Well, I don't think, you know, I think if one just simplistically looks at the share price, you might say, ooh, not wonderful, you know, bit of recovery since 2-3 years ago with the interest rate cycle turning the right way, but certainly not wonderful from where they started. But I think we need to take the environment into context, and residential developments, if one looks at building plans passed, building plans completed for the country as a whole, I mean, since COVID, it's been a far harder environment than pre-COVID levels, and residential building activity has never really recovered to the pre-COVID levels. So, if you look at that, if you look at the building cycle and how weak it's been outside of the Western Cape, you know, and for the country as a whole, you know, then you may say, well, it's probably not as bad a performance as what the share price performance might suggest. It's really been a tough environment for the developers.
Contending with a tough environment, but still, as Baldwin Properties noted last year, completing their 100th development since their start in 1996, the property market having its ups and downs, and as it stands, the business deciding that this is the next chapter, a chapter that involves a greater shareholding by the Public Investment Corporation and a delisting from the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Independent economist John Lutz joining us to take a look at the PIC's decision to buy the outstanding shares in Baldwin Properties and delist that business.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It is executive lounge time on a Wednesday. We use this as an opportunity to get to know some leading executives beyond their day-to-day responsibilities. This week's executive is a highly decorated business leader who has come all the way to studio to give us a sense of what it is that she gets up to beyond being the chief executive for personal banking at African Bank. I'm joined in studio by Mehepi Ralenala to get to know her a little bit better. Ma, thanks so much for taking the time. Lovely to have you in studio. Two master's degrees? Why?
Yes. I'm actually a very curious person, and I have grown up in an environment that, because I define myself as a change agent, if you want to effect change, you must continuously change yourself. You must continuously upgrade yourself, but also you must continuously align yourself with what's happening in the market. So two master's degrees is for me to really be at par with what's happening in my environment.
What do you enjoy most about your environment? You're in a world where financial services, as you allude to, are ever-changing by their very nature. And to be in a business like African Bank that is as competitive in the banking space, and we've got a very competitive financial landscape in South Africa, what for you then continues to drive the passion to be in this particular space?
It is an opportunity to have an impact on lives. Firstly, an impact on the lives that I work with, which is the colleagues, to be able to see them grow, to see them prosper, to see their lives changing as they transform their careers, their lives, but mostly the impact of changing lives of our customers, to see them through their life stages, finding solutions that change their lives and impact South Africa as a whole.
That impact for you stretches beyond just the customers of African Bank. You do a lot of mentorship. You take great pride. I know this in women and youth development, not just in South Africa, but wherever you're able to. Where did you kind of discover or realize, I suppose, that for you making a difference is what you would consider a calling?
Okay. I actually started very early in my life. I started school not because I was at the age of starting school, but a teacher who was in our community after my mother had lost my father took me to class with her every day so that she could look after me. So just that became a change in my life, and therefore a just mere act of kindness sparked my life. And therefore, I have to pay it forward all the time. And I've seen it with my mother. I've seen my mother, who in a community actually was able to take children that were not her own children to school, enable them to go to university and support them. So therefore, it was inherited. I don't know whether you inherit such a gift, but I was given that gift from a young age. The bigger part is for us to acknowledge that every child is a child of a community. Nobody just grows up on their own. And that very African proverb made a lot of impact to many South Africans, and therefore we just need to carry it forward.
What would you find is the most difficult part about carrying forward such a mission? Because we find ourselves in a country that is battling its own societal issues. We find ourselves in the middle of Women's Month, where we're seeing that there's still conversations around underrepresentation in the workplace, the gender pay gap. All of these things don't go away. But amidst all of this, as someone who advocates for development and empowerment, you still remain positive and you still do what you consider your effort towards this. What would you say, or where would you say we still lack, and how do we improve it?
Firstly, I just need to state that the reason why I continue is at the back of my faith. Blessed is the hand that gives, and there isn't a gift that is small. So whatever you impart with and you give it with a heart that is willing and has a right intent, that is a gift. Where we are as a country, it needs all of us to hold hands. South Africa naturally is a very positive minded country. You go back and you see how we continue to transition and overcome all our challenges, and some of them we joke about them, right? But it's our way of how we cope with every challenge that we face. If you go all over the world and you say you are from South Africa, the whole world looks at you with different eyes because they know how we've transitioned. And nobody ever thought that we'd get here. I also look at myself and thinking, my goodness, I'm able to access Park Station from the right-hand side to the left-hand side when it was not possible at the time. So we live in a country of possibilities, and that's the reason why we all have to be positive about changing and transforming our country to what we want it to be.
Mayor Ralenala, I want to take a look at that international experience. You've had the benefit and the privilege of traveling beyond the borders of South Africa. Is there a particular place you would not hesitate to return to if given the opportunity to? Not necessarily for work, for family, for the community, and just the places that you've been able to experience?
Traveling to our continent is always a blessing and a gift. Firstly, we all connect traditionally, spiritually. We recognize each other, but I think we hold certain values that connect all of us. But I had an opportunity of serving on the board of Barclays Ghana, where I used to go to Ghana on a quarterly basis, and therefore built good relationships on the ground. I just love the humility their humanity, and how they just are soft-spoken and engage with everybody on an equal basis. Ghana is just an easy country.
Does Ghana have better food than South Africa? And you can answer honestly.
So I'm a traditionalist. I love our food. Mm. South African food is diverse. Where do you get mogodu that is cooked like a South African mogodu, who actually just cooks dumpling the way we do it? Actually, my grandma used to teach us how to cook or bake bread through an oven, which is a dug out oven from the ground where you put in wood and then on the side you put in bread. I still have those skills. But mostly there's a skill that's what I can tell you. It's called maize bread. Mm-hmm. That millimil and maize bread is something that you'll never give anybody. I'll invite you to come and have some.
Oh, we'll definitely hold you to that. Meralanela, before we run out of time, I want to get some insights from your perspective. You touched on, you mentioned your grandmother and some of the things that she imparted onto you. I want to get some pearls of wisdom that you may have inherited from her or even from any other family members that you wish to pass on to the young South Africans out there, to the youth of South Africa, to the young women of South Africa, in terms of how it is that we should be approaching moving the country forward together. You mentioned, of course, that to move South Africa forward is to do it together. If you were to share some wisdom around perhaps someone that is looking for inspiration, looking to find out how to keep going, what would you say to them?
Firstly, is that we always want to talk about change, but change starts with self. So one needs to be and show the change that he wants to see. Secondly, is you have to invest in yourself. Investing in yourself, whether you read, you listen to the news, but you're just up to date with the current news. But the most important thing, all of us come from homes where our parents teach us values. Values, whether they come from a church environment, a household, around behavior. Actually, you never, as a youngster, you never see how those are valuable until you become an adult. So to the youngsters today, please go back and dig deep on what you've been taught at home, because those are the skills and techniques, and that's the conscience building that you get given at home. I'll give an example. My mother was a very, very tough woman, very clear around what you can and what you can't do and the behavior. I call her my conscience mentor in many ways. She was brutal about the things that she wants to give you feedback on. You take it or leave it. I had friends that said, ha, I can never live in your house. That's how they give you feedback, you know. The reality is those today are the ones that have really defined who I am today. I'm very grounded in faith. I am part of a prayer women's league, and I live with those women. Some of them are elderly women, and there are learnings from them. So therefore, the sense of community and openness to learning, have a teachable spirit, that's what my mother used to say, have an open mind in everything. Just listen. Sometimes you don't have to respond, but take everything that you're given as a gift and appreciate it.
Life certainly is a gift, and it is worth treasuring in every respect. We're going to have to leave this conversation on that particular note, and I think it is the perfect note to leave it on. Mehepi Ralanala, Chief Executive for Personal Banking at African Bank, joining us in studio for our executive lounge. On that note, it is 7 o'clock, which means the SAFM news team is standing by with the latest round of evening news. It also means from our side, good night.